Here's our series on aging in Portland. Retired or rewired? What it's like getting old in a youth-centered city. Are you up for that challenge? We'll bring you lots of views, but you'll have to answer this question for yourself. Is Portland a good place in which to grow old? Our guests are from Elders in Action, Barbara Bernstein, Executive Director, and Joanne Harrigal, Deputy Director. Barbara and Joanne, welcome to KABU.
Thank you.
Barbara, give us an overview of your programs, if you would.
Elders in Action was created to create a healthy, resilient, vibrant community through the active engagement of older adults. So all our programs are dependent on older adult volunteers whom we train and provide a great environment for them to be of service to their community. The main programs are advocacy, education, and service. So Joe's going to talk more about advocacy, but we work collectively with other organizations who are serving older adults, and we do one-on-one advocacy through our personal advocacy program. And that program pairs older adults in need with volunteers who can help. The average age of our volunteers is 63 years old, and they are working to help older adults experiencing problems in their lives to problem solve. We also do education and outreach, and we are responding to the needs of the community. So we get about 3,500 calls a year, and through those calls, we identify the needs and organize our education programs around those needs. So transportation, elder abuse and exploitation, and issues related to isolation. So, for instance, we do a fraud panel two or three times a year in collaboration with the Department of Justice and local law enforcement and banks, and we bring together those experts in the field and educate older adults about the issues, how to protect themselves, the resources that are available to them.
By the way, we had Ellen Clem here the other day. Do you know Ellen?
Yes, she's always on one of our panels.
And what would be your advice with respect to elderly fraud? Is there a leading piece of advice you could give us?
Well, I would say that one of the things that many report is a certain amount of shame around being perhaps taken advantage of. I remember one panel we had a law enforcement person say, "This has happened to me." So somebody who's working in the field. So to the degree that they are asking for help and talking about it, the more we talk about it and the less we keep this a secret, the less people are going to prevail in taking advantage of others. The Age-Friendly Business Program is a program developed by volunteers to educate businesses about how to create environments that serve older adults. It's an age-friendly business certification program.
Age-friendly. And you certify businesses?
We do certify them as age-friendly.
How many have you certified?
Well, over the years, many, but on average, we have about 200 that are currently active. So,
okay. I'd like to see a program. This may not describe what you just talked about, but I'd like to see a program that helps older people start businesses. Do you do anything like that, or is that no? You're shaking your head no.
Yes, that's right.
Is Portland a good place to get old in?
I'm going to say yes.
Why? Why would you say that?
It's a very walkable city. I would say that first of all, our geography really lends itself to aging well. It's a very social community, and that's one of the key factors in aging well. So it's very physical. There are quite a few opportunities for civic and social engagement. There are gaps in services, which Elders in Action really tries to address and bring. We'd like to bring attention to those things.
Gaps like what?
Well, in some areas, in some service areas, there are food deserts. So there are challenges for older adults around transportation. So if you're a low-income older adult, you have fewer opportunities to avail yourselves of the real benefits of living in Portland. Our overall intention is that older adults feel safe, connected, valued, and engaged. And that is both volunteers who are serving the older adults in need, and we want to make sure that those older adults who are in need have a place to reach out to always. So that's one of the key points I would like to make, that anybody can be of service, and Elders in Action is providing an environment for them to be of service.
By the way, how many older adults do you reach every year? How many clients do you have among the elderly?
We have 130 volunteers on average, and we serve about 3,000 older adults a year, of which about 10-15% of those become one-to-one cases where the older adult volunteer is helping an older adult in need.
And you wanted to say something about this, Joanne?
When I talk about Elders in Action to other organizations or to the public, I talk about us having three main areas. One is education, one is advocacy, and the third one is direct service. And one of the things that I think is really important about what Barbara is talking about with volunteers is our education and outreach is interesting because we do things like we work with the City of Portland Revenue Office to get information out to older adults about the arts tax, which you could just get that information on your own, but we're finding that older adults, because of their isolation and because they don't necessarily sort of, you know, get out and interact with a whole bunch of people, might not know that there's an exemption from the arts tax, and we can help them. So we go out to where the older adults are and talk to them about the arts tax, talk to them about the exemption, and then if they need help filling out paperwork, we'll help them with that.
Who's exempt or who can be exempt?
People that are over 70 or have a permanent disability and are eligible with respect to income criteria. So they should call us if they're interested in getting more information about that. So that's one example of outreach that we do. We also have worked with TriMet to get the word out on the Hop Pass, which is a new fare option that's available to people for public transportation. It's been originally it was spun as sort of a new great thing that you can do just by hooking into your computer or your phone, which left a whole bunch of older adults sort of thinking, well, I don't really want to do that. And what we need to do is get the word out about this is easier for you and it's going to save you money and it's not that hard to do. So let's show you how to do it. So we've been doing outreach on that. And then one last area that we get out the word on is frauds and scams. And we've mentioned that before, but sometimes in all of these cases, we train volunteers to go out and do this education with the public. And so frauds and scams, we have a individual that's going to go out and talk to a group of people that live in assisted living, or not in assisted living, but live in a community, and all of them are in wheelchairs, and they are interested in this information because they get a lot of phone calls about frauds, and really just knowing six important things is what they need to know, as opposed to knowing all of the background of sort of the intricacies of frauds. They just need to know if someone calls you and you have a feeling that something's just not right, hang up. That's all.
Wait a minute. You disagree with Barbara Clem. Barbara says, don't answer the phone. Joanne, as deputy director, one of your responsibilities is housing. How does your organization address housing related to the elderly in Portland?
So we, as Barbara mentioned, we get about 3,000 calls a year. I would say that probably 50% of them are about housing. And by that, I mean people will call and say they just received no-cause eviction or they've just been priced out of their apartment and can we help them find a new place to live? We've done a couple of things in response to that. One, we talk to anybody that calls us about with a housing problem about what their different options are because quickly getting into a place that is cheaper for them or as cheap as where they're living is very difficult. So we talk to them about, do you have friends that you can stay with? Have you talked to your landlord? Can we help you talk to your landlord? Things like that. Then we also have worked with other partners in the region to form up programs like the Home Share program that we mentioned before at Ecumenical Ministries. That program had gone out, had not been functioning, and we just helped to start it up again because we need more tools. And then we've just recently started a new thing, which is we're doing workshops with people that are trying to sign up for subsidized housing to get them on waiting lists. Because while it might seem like it's an easy thing to do, it can be very complicated, and you want to make sure that you do it right. So we have workshops at our office once a month with people that are interested in getting on housing waiting lists, and we'll help them fill out forms and submit them to as many places as possible so that they can get on the waiting list when those open.
Is the Home Share program, is Elders in Action the primary point of contact when you have a housing problem? Or
I would not say that we are. I think we are one of many organizations that you can call to help you with various aspects of it. We can't find you a place to live, but we can talk you through different things that you should make sure you're aware of so that you can get into the next place as soon as possible.
Where do you guys fit into that pattern, picture of who to call?
I think we are a portal to get connected to community resources, so many, many people will call us. And what our two MSW program coordinators will do is think with the person about their needs and then direct them to the appropriate connection.
I guess the other thing I would say that's unique about Elders in Action in this area is when people call us, we help them with the next step, but we also will then follow up separate from that with advocacy on things that are missing.
What do you think needs to be done here in Portland to ease this housing crisis relative to the elderly?
One of the things that I would like to do is make sure that people understand that there are people that are between 70 and 90 and even above that, that are being either evicted for no cause or being priced out of their apartments. I would love to see them not see that first step not happen. So it's one thing to have someone be evicted and then find another place for them to live. I think there should be some special circumstances for people that are A, low income, and B, older, over a certain age, because they're not as flexible. And it's not easy for them to just go to a shelter. Shelters are not built with older adults in mind. They're usually, they're not accommodating to older adults. So that's what I would like to see, is people not having to be leaving their homes in the first place.
But, Joanne, you studied under some fabulous housing developers at MIT. When they sense a profit, they're going to squeeze that market. What do you say in that situation?
I think that public policy is probably I think that we need to advocate for renters' rights and to change laws in the state of Oregon that come down to the local level, like no-cause eviction is allowed in the state of Oregon, and I think we need to modify those laws.
What do you think of some of the other innovations here, like small housing units and accessory flats and things that the city's promoting? Are those good things for elderly people?
I think they are good things. I think we have a lot more people looking for places to live than we can accommodate, It's the timeline. We still have people pouring out of their existing homes looking for a place to live. And when you're 80 and you've been living somewhere else for probably 20 to 30 years or more, having no place to live, probably moving right into another place is not going to be really very easy.
There's not a lot of options if you lose your place to live.
There aren't.
What are the things that the city needs to take on to make Portland a really first-class place for the elderly? What's on your agenda for changing things?
My personal agenda is not necessarily city and county, but rather statewide, because I think we have some rules on the statewide level that need to change before the city and the county can implement some of the tools that they want to implement. And I think that we've got some good, as they say, tools in our toolbox, like proliferating ADUs and generating funding on the local level. Portland just passed a ballot measure that generated funds for building more affordable housing. But I think things like sort of renters' rights and no-cause eviction rollback are really important to keep the flow of people out of the housing stock.
What's the Home for Everyone project?
I think they call it the combined office for the city and the city of Portland, as well as Gresham and the other cities in Multnomah County, as well as the county. There's an office that's head by Mark Jolin, and it brings together all the different jurisdictions to talk about what are the problems as well as what are the tools that we can use to mitigate the housing crisis that we have now. And it takes the funds from both the county and the collective cities together to actually try to mitigate some of these problems. One of the first initiatives that they took was to try and house all of the houseless veterans in Multnomah County, and they were very successful because they brought all of the services and the funding from all the jurisdictions together to bear on this particular part of the population.
Are veterans a special area of interest for you guys? For your organization?
They're not necessarily something that we focus on specifically, although many of the people that call us are veterans, and we track that. Multnomah County specifically, and I think the other two counties as well in the area, have really very effective and focused veterans offices themselves that will help veterans coordinate the services that they are entitled to. And so we work with them. We will work with somebody that calls us that says they're a veteran, but we also will hook them up with veteran services so that they can get a very focused attention that they need. One other thing that I wanted to mention was Elders in Action, working together with a variety of other nonprofit organizations in the Portland area, like Meals on Wheels and Store to Door and El Programa, various ERCO, et cetera, have gotten together with a grant from Meyer Memorial to look at formation of a elder advocacy coalition. And we're excited about that because it would take all of the service providers and collectively raise that voice of the lower income, more vulnerable senior at a policy as well as funding level in the area as well as through the state. And we're hopeful that getting all of those groups together at one table and forming a coalition will allow us to say, you know, there are a lot of issues out there. They all impact older adults inordinately, and we need to raise that voice together.
Joanne and Barbara, anything that you guys would like to add that I didn't bring up?
Even though age itself is a kind of overarching category, there are specific needs within different groups in the aging population. And so it's important for us to look at the complexity of it as we serve that population.
I would agree. There's definitely, when you talk about the elderly, you're talking about a very diverse kind of cross population, different ages, different interests, orientations, problems, issues. It's a really complicated thing you're dealing with. Well, good luck with it. Thank you for doing that.
Can I just add that we are always looking for more volunteers. Multnomah County, we are the host of the RSVP program, and so we're looking for volunteers for our RSVP programs that are 55 and older and live in Multnomah County. So we could always use volunteers in Multnomah County as well as the other two counties. And then we also would encourage people to call us if they have a question, and our main line is 503-235-5474 if they have a question or a concern.
That was Joanne Herrigel, Deputy Director, and also here is Barbara Bernstein, Executive Director, Elders in Action. Thank you both for joining us today. And here's a portion of our interview with Jeanette Liardi, a Portland-based gerontologist and community educator who offers workshops on brain fitness, creativity, ageism, boomer marketing, and other related subjects. Jeanette, welcome to KABU.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You're known as a specialist here in Portland on the subject of aging. What is ageism, and how does it affect our society?
Well, ageism is actually any form of prejudice or discrimination that's based on a person's age, which actually can also be related to young people as well. We can be ageist toward young people just as younger people could be ageist toward older adults. So it's any form of prejudice or discrimination that uses age as the guide.
We're living in what I think of as a youth-oriented culture here in Portland. Is ageism more prominent here, or is this just the norm?
Actually, ageism is the norm. We're not only in a youth-centered culture here in Portland, we're in a youth-centered culture in our entire country.
Did you say the word gerontophobia?
Gerontophobia, the fear of being old and the fear of old people.
Is that a reality?
It is a reality. The thing is, Portland, if anything, is a little bit better in terms of being more welcoming to the concept of aging. And because, as your audience will probably know about, the age-friendly movement in Portland, Portland as a city is a little more advanced in that way than many other places in the country.
By the age-friendly movement, you mean that the fact that we're part of that World Health Organization group of.
It was the first U.S. city to be designated age-friendly by the World Health Organization. And Portland is always usually included on lists of best places to retire. So Portland itself is a little bit better, but if you look at national TV ads and talk show monologues, ageism is rampant in our culture, that everything that is youth-centered is considered better than getting old because we're so afraid of getting old.
Would you agree this is a good place to retire?
People are attracted to Portland because of the lifestyle. The options here are greater. The culture is more vibrant than in many other places. The affordability of housing, though, is a big problem. So it depends on the retirees' income levels and Healthcare here is very good for older adults compared with lots of other places in the country.
And Portland isn't an inexpensive place to retire.
Not
just housing, but other things.
Other things, too. That's right. So when we're talking about quality of life for older adults, it really is a combination of what the individual is experiencing and bringing to the experience of retirement, plus what society can provide for the retiree. And that's a challenge all around the country. But I think Portland, in certain ways, housing is a challenge. I think transportation is a little bit better here than in other parts of the country for older adults.
Well, give us an example of what you mean by one of these negative stereotypes.
The big one is defining aging solely as a condition of deterioration and decline. That as we get older, we fall apart. Our hearing goes, our eyesight goes, those kinds of things. But what we don't understand as a population is that there are some certain things we gain as we get older. A lot has to do with the changes in the brain, and the older brain actually is different from the middle-aged and younger brain, and in some ways is better. And when I talk about brain fitness, I really emphasize those points because people are very surprised to hear that.
Whatever happened to the idea of older people being wise and contributing to society with their wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we have that at one time, or did we ever have it?
I think we had it to a certain extent in the American culture. Other cultures are better at it than we have been. But actually, that concept of aging wisdom really goes back thousands and thousands of years before the existence of writing, because how did society understand what needs to be done except through the tales and the experiences of older adults?
Lately, I've heard a couple of terms that are new to me, positive aging and anti-aging. What do they mean?
Let me start with anti-aging. Anti-aging has different meanings depending on what you're talking about. There's a scientific definition of aging that is the death of our cells. Our cells duplicate a certain number of times, and then they start to lose their ability to replicate themselves. So we have our DNA, our chromosomes, have these long strands at the ends of which are called little bits called telomeres. And every time they multiply, the telomere gets a little shorter and shorter. Now, there are scientists working on trying to reverse that process, and that would be anti-aging in its scientific sense, to stop the death of cells or to delay the death of cells. But then we also have a cultural definition of anti-aging, which is anything that covers up or delays the aging process. And I'm talking about things like wrinkle creams and dyeing your hair, covering your gray. Those things don't delay the aging process or reverse the aging process. They just cover it up. Positive aging also is another term that's used differently depending on the context. Positive aging in a very superficial sense, and another phrase for it sometimes is called successful aging, is when people assume that the individual is solely responsible for their quality of life and their ability to age. And to some extent, it's true. We do need to eat well and sleep, have enough sleep and exercise. But that's not the whole story. So positive aging, in its truest sense, means to have a positive attitude about aging, but it also implies that society will provide opportunities for people to age well. The two have to go together. It can't just be the individual's responsibility. I prefer the term empowered aging rather than positive aging or successful aging. By the way, having a positive attitude about aging can actually prolong your life by about 7.5 years.
Is aging considered an illness or a disease?
Aging itself is not a disease, although if you speak with the scientists that are working on the telomere lengthening, prolonging that, they might want to reterm it as a disease, redefine it as a disease. But living long itself is not the disease. So I tend to not want to see aging as an illness. It's not something wrong. It's something we're supposed to do. Some scientists have said that the person who will live to be 150 is already born, that they are making such strides that they can increase the longevity. When you talk to a biomed gerontologist like Aubrey de Grey, he's from the SENS, SENS Research Foundation in California. He's one of the scientists who's working on extending life longevity and seeing aging, redefining aging as an actual illness to be cured. There are different methodologies that scientists are looking into. Calorie restriction, the University of Southern California is looking into that. There's a substance called NMN, which repairs the damage caused by sun and radiation to our cells, and that's being looked at the University of New South Wales. There's immunotherapy. All kinds of approaches are being taken. So scientists are working on it, and, you know, they may get there, but I would prefer to see for now that aging, if we can embrace aging as something that's a good thing, and especially, as I mentioned before, what our brains can do as we get older, we become much more better able to use both sides of our brain, both hemispheres of our brain, the older we get. We are we have better longer-term memories than younger people do. We have more gathered experience, and that's the wisdom that we can talk about as we get older. We have more experience against which to apply new situations to. And older adults, if they keep their brains healthy, are better at that than younger people are. So there are some good things about getting older that we need to really accept and celebrate.
So what's your advice to people here in Portland who are aging and over 70 or over 80? We've got an increasing amount of number of people in that group. What do you tell them to think about?
I tell them to stay engaged, be glad about getting older, be proud of getting older, be out there in the world and assert yourself as an older person, and to surround yourself with people of all ages, because we can all be models of what positive aging can be about. There's a lot we can learn from younger generations, and there's a lot that younger generations can learn from us. So that's what I would recommend. Be out there, take care of your body, take care of your mind, challenge your mind, and think about the things that you can contribute, that the talents and skills that you have amassed and your wisdom that you have amassed over a lifetime, and how you can share that. Not only will it help our society and increase our social productivity, it'll keep you living longer. That's, I think, the more natural way to extend your life.
So you're saying that ageism is the only prejudice that we're all susceptible to. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's ironic that not all of us are susceptible to racism or homophobia or sexism, but we're all getting older. So if we don't solve some of these ageist stereotypes, you know, knock them down, we're doing future generations a disservice, because they're going to face it as well. They're going to face the marginalization and isolation. They're going to be denied opportunities for work, and their productivity will be reduced.
That's it for this week's episode. Join us next time when we talk with Eleanor Butts of Generations United and Pauline Berkey of Metro Homeshares. You've been listening to our series on aging in Portland, Retired or Rewired. You can listen to any episode in this series or the entire series if you go to kboo.fm and look for the show under my name, Tom Flynn. Thanks for joining us today.